بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين. Dear brothers and sisters, سلام عليكم ورحمة الله. In the fifth session on Khums today, we want to continue on the concept of Ma'une. In the last session, we approached the issue of Ma'une from different angles, namely its definition. And today we want to continue with the subject matter of Ma'une and open up different angles to this important matter. The reason why it's important is you have to recall the pivotal equation of Khums and the payment of Khums, which was in a given year, the annual gains minus the ma'une, whatever the result is, divided by five, that is how much you have to pay when you reach your Khums year. And so that's why it's important to know what the ma'une is, because you want to rightfully deduct certain expenses from your annual gains. If you don't know what the ma'una is, or you have a wrong interpretation or wrong understanding of the ma'una, you may be deducting or sometimes even not deducting from the annual gains rightfully. And so that's why it's important. It's all to do with one's responsibility towards the 12th Imam. Okay, on page 16, there are a number of points we want to, inshallah, allude to. Note 1. So the khums is levied on that which one earns or one gains. You should by now fully understand where I'm coming from when I say that which one earns or that which one gains. Earning was Ayatollah Khamenei and the minority of the jurisprudence position, and gains was Ayatollah Sistani and the majority of the jurisprudence position. The khums is levied on that which one earns during a given khums year from day one. After all, in chapter 8, verse 41, it reads, whatever you gain, مَا غَنِمْتُمْ مِنْ شَيْءٍ, whatever you gain, فَأَنَّ لِلَّهِ خُمُسَهُ, a fifth is Allah's. Now, the point, the delicate point here is this. There's a difference between khums leviability, the khums being levied on something that you gain, versus the khums having to be paid. Okay? Yes, whatever you earn or whatever you gain from day one throughout your khums year, from day one, all your earnings, all your gains, even from day one onwards, the khums is levied upon it. But there's no duty to pay the khums. In relation to being levied, that happens from day one. And the verse of the Quran, chapter 8, verse 41, the prima facie meaning, the superficial meaning, illustrates and demonstrates that. He says, whatever you gain, a fifth is Allah's. Here, the prima facie meaning is even from day one. However, that's to do with the leviability. It's levied. But do you have to pay then and there? The answer is no. When it comes to payment, you've been afforded a 1 year respite period. Now, I'll speak more about that. We'll discuss that in note 2. However, if you want to pay from day one or after 1 month, you can if you want. Because why can you if you want? Why is that not a problem? Because khums has been levied upon it. And although you've been given a 1 year respite period, you want to pay it once every month. It's more on a par with precaution, and there's nothing wrong with that. Okay, so The first point is to appreciate the difference between leviability of Choms and its payment. These are two different subject matters. As I said, we'll discuss the this respite one-year period soon, right now. But before we do, there's one point where it's a minority position, but I've seen it in the treatise of Ayatollah Sistani. Ayatollah Khomeini and many others have not alluded to this point. And as far as I know, they haven't, you know, raised it anywhere, and they haven't used it to express their fatwa or express obligatory precaution in this matter. But I've seen it with Ayatollah Sistani. There may be others too. I haven't exhaustively researched all the jurisprudence. Here, continuing with note one, however, imagine you have earned or gained X amount during the year. So during your Khums year, let's say your Khums year was March the 13th, let's say on April the 13th, you earned or gained, depending on your position, your marja's position, your religious authority's position, you earned X amount during the year. Now, on April, you earned X amount. Now, you have another 11 months. But you know that all the remaining 11 months, all the remaining year's expenses, all the remaining 11 months' ma'une are to be taken care of without there being any need to touch X. So you've earned or gained, according to Ayatollah Sistani, you've gained. That's more broad, if you remember. A substantial amount of money after 1 month into the year. And you know, as a result of constant salaries throughout the year, you can pay for your expenses with those constant monthly salaries, and you don't need to touch X amount, which you gained after 1 month into the year. You don't need to touch it. You have certainty, you have certitude that X need not be touched. I can pay off all my monthly expenses for the remaining 11 months with my oncoming salary, monthly salaries, for example. Here, Ayatollah Sistani has said, although it's not a fatwa, it's an obligatory precaution. You either have to abide by it, or if you don't want to abide by it because it's not a fatwa, you have to revert to the next in line in expertise and in knowledge. Ayatollah Sistani says that in such scenarios, in relation to X, that X amount, you would have to pay its khums then and there after 1 month. Why would you want to delay it? You know it's going to be untouched. You have a responsibility to pay it there, then and there, even though only 1 month has passed, because you have certainty it's not going to be touched until the end of your Khums year. But I have to repeat, this is not a fatwa, it's an obligatory precaution. Okay. In relation to the next point, note 2 on page 16, the evidence for being permitted extra time. By extra time, it may not be a very technical term. What I mean is being afforded 1 year before the payment of the Khums becomes obligatory. Because before that, the Khums is levied on your gains. However, it's not obligatory to pay it. Save in that one exception, which we mentioned just a minute ago. So, the evidence for being permitted that 1 year and being afforded a respite period is the aforementioned hadith that we mentioned in, I think it was in the third session, or possibly the second or third session, where a part of the hadith read, Al-Khumsu Ba'dal Ma'una. the chumas applies, the payment of it applies after the ma'one. The ma'one being the spending of one's expenses that we touched upon in the last session, and we're going to continue upon that subject in this session. So the chumas payment applies after the ma'une has been deducted from your annual gains, then the chums payment. So it's when it says al chumso ba'd al ma'une, it's referring to the chums payment, not the leviability. I've written here the chums association. What I mean is not the fact that the chums is levied upon. No. The leviability of the chums on different things that you've gained, that happens from day one. Al chumso ba'd al ma'une here means the payment of the chums. When is that to happen? After you've deducted the ma'une from your annual gains. Not that the leviability is after you've deducted your ma'une from your annual gains. No, the leviability actualizes from day one, when you start gaining. Okay. Now, looking at the evidence where this 1 year has come from, one of the evidences. So the term ma'une in this hadith, al-khumsu ba'd al-ma'une, the khums payment is after the ma'une, meaning after the ma'une is deducted from it. The term ma'une has been mentioned in absolute terms. Now, when a term is used in the scripture, be it in the Quran, in the Ahadith, when we encounter the term in its absolute sense, here, the first thing we have to do is look for a definition of that term in the scriptures, in the Quran, in the Ahadith. Is there a particular definition for ma'une? Is there a particular time frame associated with ma'une according to the scripture, according to the texts? This is what we have to look for. And the answer, we come and see, there is no specific or explicit time frame in relation to the ma'une. We don't have a definition by the legislator, by the Holy Messenger and or his successors, saying that this is the time frame for the ma'une. Now, whenever we don't have a definition by the legislator for a term which is used in the absolute sense, we go to the common layperson. As they say in Arabic, we refer to urf, urf. It's a very important term. We're going to use it quite a lot. We can translate it as according to the common layperson or according to laity. I may use these two, common layperson and laity, interchangeably. Now, first, what we would do is refer to the common layperson at the time of the Holy Messenger and or his successors and see how the common layperson at that time, what they understood from the term ma'une. If we come up with an answer, so be it. If we don't come up with an answer, we have to go to the books of the lexicons of the lexicographers and see the lexicons which define the words on a par with its meaning at the time of the Holy Messenger, not modern day dictionaries. If we don't come to a result on how the common layperson at the time of the Holy Prophet, for example, what they understood from ma'une, what time frame they understood from it, here we go to the lexicons. And if we don't come to an answer there, we can then treat it as an issue of today's urf, what the urf today, how they view the ma'une. Now, I don't want to go too much into the principles of legal theory, although it's a very sweet discussion, what one has to do, and there are a lot of preliminary points I can add here, but that would be diverting from our main discussion. But the point is this, that irrespective of the laity of the time of formation or the laity of today, the answer is the same. And that is that they would use the term ma'one on a par with one's annual expenses. Even today, in those countries where there are, where one calculates one's taxes and so on and so forth, it's a yearly, annual procedure that they evaluate their yearly expenses, and then certain things have to be taxed and so on and so forth. So here, this 1 year can be extrapolated from this hadith and the fact that ma'una is used in the absolute sense, and we refer it to the common layperson, we refer it to the urf, and they would say, yes, things are usually evaluated over a 1 year period. That's one point. Although we have traditions that this, as I said, since the leviability is from day one, there are traditions that suggest and demonstrate that it was out of Allah's divine grace that He's expanded the respite period to a year. This was as a result of Allah's rahmah, His mercy, to make it easier for you. You can still make it hard. Depends. Someone may want to give it on a monthly basis. That may be very noble of them. But that which is wajib, and it's what that is obligatory for the duty bound, is after 1 year. Okay. So that's the second point which I wanted to refer to. Now, in the next page, page 17, that would now the ma'una is deducted from the annual gains and from one's yearly gains, annual gains. That was the start of the equation, annual gains minus ma'una, in brackets, whatever the result, divided by 5. And the ma'una itself is not khums leviable. The ma'una, the khums isn't levied on the ma'una. That's why you can deduct it from the annual gains without any problem. Now, we've given the definition of ma'una. Here we want to just enter the different types, the classifications that exist. Some classifications help us to understand the examples of ma'una. And there are two types of ma'una. We're going to go through this on page 17. Some classifications of khums are important, and we're going to mention those two in the next page or so. That they're important because when we want to give the rulings of khums, it's important to appreciate which ma'una we're dealing with primarily. And this will become more evident. So this is the reason why we're going through different classifications. So far, I'll be covering only two classifications of khums. The first is on page 17. So the ma'una can be divided into type A and type B ma'una. Type A ma'una are the livelihood annual expenses. And these are one's own expenses, one's own food, shelter, clothing, travel, education, socializing, giving gifts, repairing things, accommodation, etc. Also, one's dependents' expenses, one's spouse, children, parents, or although these are all potential cases, someone may not have a child, someone may not need spend for their parents. These are just potential legitimate cases that may apply. Or others to whom you would be classed as a breadwinner, albeit temporarily. For example, someone comes to your house for 10 days or for a week. Who's the breadwinner? You're their breadwinner. You're providing their food. They're your guest. You're the host. Those expenses of food and shelter and other expenses that may apply to them, you may take them out, for example. These also count as your livelihood expenses. Charities that you give, presents that you give, the insurance for your home is an example of, and we'll speak about insurance later in the next session or two. Taxes that you have to pay for the house, for example, this is also part of your livelihood expenses. So these are livelihood expenses. These we shall call from now on type A ma'one. And by no means have I exhausted the list. There may be many other things. You can think of much better examples. In relation to type B ma'une, these are expenses which are not for your livelihood, for yourself or your spouse or the children or basic needs. These are expenses spent for the acquisition of profit. So you want to make a profit now at work, for example. You want to make a profit, and now you need expenses. And when we say expenses, you're depleting money. You're depleting your wealth. You're depleting your annual gains. Okay, so these are expenses. It's a type of ma'one, but it's not for your livelihood issues. It's for acquiring a profit at work, for example. Now look here. If you look at the examples, payment for transport. It's a payment, so your annual gains are being depleted. All these examples, there's a depletion at stake. So payment for transport, for example, transport of fruits or, you know, or goods for you who you want to sell them, so you need it to be transported. Payment for security or the guarding of one's goods, you pay the security guard. This is also, you're protecting your goods, your commodities. So this is an expense you're giving for the acquisition of profit. Renting a place of work, renting here, you're depleting. Giving wages to employees would fall under this category. Governmental taxes on your workplace, for example. That's spent to repair or fix tools or instruments of work or of earning. Petrol for taxi drivers. That's another expense for them to acquire profit. The petrol will be a type B ma'one. And in brief, that which qualifies as expenses covered for making a profit. So the kind of criterion here is a form of depletion arising, a diminishment, if you like, of annual gains for the sake of making a profit. These are examples of type B ma'one also fit in the equation. Annual gains minus ma'one divided by 5. So that minus ma'one entails both the type A and type B ma'one classes. Okay. Now, just to differentiate certain terms so that we all speak on the same wavelength. I've discussed the two types of ma'one in this classification. Now, look at this next point on page 18. A few examples here. As I say, you have to forgive the rudimentary nature of the examples I'm giving. You can think of much better examples, I'm sure. So, barber's scissors, or the confectionery's cans of Coke, or the confectionery shop per se, the shop itself, or the taxi itself, the actual taxi itself, the medical instruments of the doctor, the medical instruments itself, all these will be deemed an investment or capital, not a ma'one. These would be called what they call in Arabic, Malu Tejara, but we haven't entered this phase of our Khums discussion. And that will be translated as things with which you are profit making. Malu Tejara. Okay. Now, these examples I've given here are not ma'une. You should have come to the reason why already, because with ma'une there's a depletion. Here, with the barber's scissors, there's not a depletion. You have it, it remains with you. It's an investment. And if you sell it, that's another issue. Or the confectionery cans of Coke, it's a capital, your profit making. It's not an expense for profit making. It's your profit making with those cans of Coke. You'll be selling them and making a profit. Or the shop itself, or the taxi. All this, you have to differentiate here between ma'une and things which are not ma'une. Here, we're focusing on capital. Now look at, here we say, all these will be deemed as capital, not ma'une. Why? Because they are all profit making. The barber's scissors. The barber is making a profit through the scissors. I.e., not the expenses for profit making. The barber's scissors or the cans of Coke are not expenses for making a profit. They are profit making themselves. But amongst these things which are profit making themselves, some are directly profit making, some are indirectly profit making. Whichever case it is, it doesn't matter. They are not ma'une because they don't entail depletion. They are capital itself. It's part of your annual gains. They have value. And they're not examples of you spending expenses for the acquisition of profit. That would have been type B ma'une. So look, some things are directly profit-making, like cans of Coke, because directly you sell and get a profit. So it's malu tejaras. The can of Coke is something through which you make a profit directly. There's no depletion of your money or wealth. And others are indirectly profit-making, such as the shop or the car. The taxi of the taxi driver is indirectly profit-making because you're not selling the taxi, you're giving services and then you gain profit. You make a profit through the taxi, but it's indirect. Or the shop. Through the shop, you sell cans of Coke. Or through the scissors, you do people's hair and get a profit, and so on and so forth. Now, it's this latter, things which are expenses for profit-making, which concern us now, the type B ma'une. We're discussing the ma'une. So here, the expenses used for profit-making, like the petrol for the taxi driver or the rent of the shop, this would be type B ma'une. But some things, and we haven't discussed it yet, but we have to do in the future, some things are profit-making per se. They're not expenses for profit-making. I only wanted you to appreciate the subtle differences here, because when you want to calculate your khums, you have to know what the definitions are. Okay, so that was another point. The next point is also on page 18. The ma'une, there are three or four very pivotal principles that apply to the ma'une. The first one mentioned here is, as we said, the ma'une is deducted from annual gains. And then, whatever the result, is divided by five. The first point is, this deduction has to happen in actuality. It can't be a potential deduction. It has to happen in actuality. Now, I know in actuality is a philosophical term. Well, it can be used by common lay people too. Bil fi'l, meaning that it has to have happened. Not that it should have happened, but it didn't. But since it should have, we'll deduct it anyway from the annual gains. No. That would be cheating the system. Okay, so look at note 1 on page 18. The ma'une must be deducted in actuality when calculating tehom, when calculating the khums. Now, this is just an example that if one were to be over economical, for example, they usually spend £50 of petrol every month. That is their norm based on their work, their background, their children and their duties. They spend £50 of petrol every month. Now, £50 of petrol for 12 months is £600. But now they want to be over economical. They want to live a bit, you know, frugally for a year and spend £25 every month. Excuse me. Here, if they spend £25 every month, living a frugal life and being over economical, that would lead them spending £300 after a year. So they've spent £300 in actuality, but potentially the norm was £600 for them. And you know, it's the opposite of extravagant living. Here now, they've halved their expenses by a half and spent £300 on petrol. Can they say, well, our norm was £600 a month, therefore we will deduct that the other £300 anyway, because that was our norm. But in reality, they only spent, in actuality, £300. Can they deduct that extra £300, making it £600? The answer is no. The first principle of Ma'one, it has to be only those are deducted which are deducted in actuality, not that which is the norm to be deducted. Okay, so that saved £300 cannot be deducted from one's annual gains. Another example, let's say someone gives you a ma'one of £200, whatever the ma'one is. It may have been your taxes, they gave it to you as a present, £200. It may have been for another ma'one example. And they gave you, like the petrol example, for example, they gave you £200 of ma'one, whatever that ma'one is, be it type A or type B. And they gave it to you as a present for free. That X amount of ma'one given to you for free, can you say that, well, normally I would buy that £200 of ma'one by myself, that was the norm for me. Now it's been given to me free, and I haven't paid any £200 any longer for that given ma'one. Can I deduct that £200 from my annual gains? The answer is no. Because only that which is spent in actuality, in relation to this £200 ma'one, it was given to you. And now it's given to you just because the norm was you spending that 200, you can't go and deduct it because you didn't spend anything. So you can't go and deduct that 200. Okay. Next, slide 19. It's another principle of the ma'une. Now we've discussed this before, I think in the last session, so I won't. I'll just quickly read through it. There's no need to explain it anymore. It should be very self-evident. So the notion of ma'un is intertwined with extravagance, israf, waste, tabdhir, sins or isyan or transgressions, and safa, mindlessness or stupidity. So the expenses spent, the ma'un is spent, deducted from the annual gains, must be within one's norm. It must be on a par with you and the norm that is expected of you by the common layperson, by urf. In a manner whereby the informed common lay Muslim does not deem such a spending as extravagant, wasteful, sinful or mindless. Here the common layperson would have to be a common lay Muslim, you know, a Sharia abiding person. Otherwise, for the non-Sharia abiding person, many forms of expenses that you do may be sins or wasteful. They may have no problem with that. Extravagance is when you purchase and consume two fish and chips portions for yourself when the common layperson regards one as enough. So in such a case, one cannot deduct the price of one portion from one's annual income. Wasteful behavior is when you order 10 portions for 6 people and after 8 portions have been used, be it extravagantly or not, the rest are thrown away. Here, the cost of 2 portions cannot be deducted from one's annual income. That's assuming if extravagance didn't arise. Otherwise, if extravagance did arise too, the expenses would be more. Sinful behavior is when you purchase something haram to consume or to entertain oneself with. Such money must not be counted as ma'una and thus cannot be deducted. So you can't deduct it from the annual gains. Mindless transactions such as paying for a child's toy 3 times the price when you can get hold of its normal retail price must also... for some reason the print which I have ends there. I didn't notice that when I was revising for this session. But most probably says must also, if you pay 3 times the price, that surplus that you have paid for that, you could have bought it for X, you mindlessly, irrationally paid 3 times the amount. When you knew you can find it for X amount, you paid 3X, 3 times much. That surplus, a fifth would be levied upon it. And you can't deduct it from your annual gains. Okay. Hopefully I haven't missed anything from page 19. It should have ended there. But that was the second principle of the ma'une. The next issue on page 20 is another classification. And this classification we need when describing certain rulings of the Khums. Because when we want to give the rulings of the Khums, it helps to know the different classifications of the ma'una so that it can, you know, we can then, it's more easily digested. The rulings are more easily digested. It facilitates our understanding of the rulings. So another classification of the ma'una is where it can be divided into daily routine expenses on one side and non-daily routine expenses. So an example of the daily routine expenses are things which... Now the daily routine expenses can also be subdivided into two. One is consumables or non-durables, things which are consumed, they don't endure, they're not durable, such as rice, salt, oil, perfume, makeup. These things, well, clothes here, these would be durables, but there are some forms of clothing which may qualify as non-durable. Two examples are masks or gloves, for example, you know, gloves which the doctors wear, or you wear only once and then you throw it away. These are non-durable. And in general, these are soft goods. The point is, they are daily routine expenses. They're used on a daily basis, but they are consumables. This is important when we come to the rulings, how the khums is levied on these and what happens at the end of the year in relation to these. When they're consumable or they're non-durable, you deduct it from your annual gains. Now, let's say at the end of the year, some of these are left. They're left before you. What's their ruling? They used to be ma'une during the year, but some of it has been left. You had deducted it from your annual gains. So now they acquire the status of annual gains if any of it is left at the end of the year, and therefore you would have to pay its khums. Now that was I just gave you a quick example of what I meant by the rulings and the classification, but we're going to come to this in much more detail. Okay, coming back to the classification, also daily routine expenses can be divided into durables or things which aren't consumed. Okay, For example, the house, the car, the chair. These can also be called hard goods, in opposition to the previous soft goods. So the hard and the soft goods here, they're both examples of two classes of daily routine expenses. So here, you're not consuming the house or the car or the chair or the television and so on and so forth, the laptop or clothes in general, you know, normal clothes. These are hard goods. You don't consume them, but you use them. You use them. With the other one, you do consume and deplete them. You consume the rice. You apply the perfume. You apply the makeup and so on and so forth. So that was two classes of the daily routine expenses, but also the ma'oni can be divided into non-daily routine expenses. And here, how the jurisprudence have classified the non-daily routine expenses is that on a par with the Sharia and the five rulings of the Sharia: obligatory, recommended, neutral, discouraged, and haram. Now the haram, that if you do something haram, you've exited the boundaries of ma'one. Okay, you can't have a haram ma'one. So now we'll be discussing four of the five rulings. So some things are obligatory to pay for. Okay, they're not daily routine expenses. They're non-daily, but the Sharia has said they are obligatory to pay for. And since the Sharia has said it's not haram by saying it's obligatory, it counts as your ma'one. For example, the obligatory hajj, or atonements, the kafarat, or blood money, or the nudhur, the vows that you make, and then the expenses they entail, these would be ma'one. Or, for example, things which are mustahab or recommended to pay for, such as going on ziyarat, going on holidays, for example. Now, it may be just having a recreational holiday, or going for ziyarah, a pilgrimage, and so on and so forth. Giving charity, going for umrah, for hajj, in a mustahab manner. So these two, the Sharia has said they are mustahab, and they count as expenses, albeit non-daily. Some things are permissible to pay for. They're mubah, such as offering presents, forms of halal leisure and entertainment, inviting guests, for example. And other examples I'm sure you can think of. And some non-daily routine expenses may be discouraged. They're makruh, but still they can count as ma'one. And here, for example, things which are makruh to consume, to eat, or makruh to wear, or makruh to watch, these kind of things, it can still count as ma'une, but because it's not haram at the end of the day, and therefore you can deduct it from your annual gains. Okay, so the summary so far, I think on page 21, we'll stop there on page 21, and the reason for stopping there is because there are two questions that have been posed. I want to quickly go through them. The first, Salamu alaikum, I hope this email finds you well. Being a housewife, my nafaqah is taken care of by my husband. So whatever little I earn, so here look, they're earning now. So that the nafaqah is taken care of by their husband, but they are also themselves earning. I usually spend in giving gifts to my parents or siblings and or sadaqah, sadaqah being the charities. I used to pay khums on my whole income, but I asked a visiting scholar and was told that I can deduct the above mentioned amount, meaning you can deduct the gifts, you can deduct the sadaqah that you give or the gifts you can give. And that's right, because during the year, as you're earning your annual gains, you're deducting from them with your gifts, with the sadaqah, and that's okay. There's no need to, every time you get the income after 1 month's salary, to pay it then. You can leave it for a year to pay the khums, and during that year, you can keep on deducting. But it's still, if you want to pay the khums every time you receive the salary, it's very noble of you. You're paying more to those who require khums. You're paying more for your religion. But the duty is after 1 year. And therefore, during that year, the ma'unah can be deducted from your annual gains. Al-khumsu ba'ad al-ma'unah, the tradition said. My question is, is that correct? Well, I've explained that. Yes, it is. Or, since I spent most of my earnings this way, am I spending more than my ma'unah and should pay khums on it? Right. Now, the question is saying, have I gone overboard with the charities? Because we said one of the principles of ma'un is it has to be on a par with your status quo. And that depends on your socioeconomic background, the way you lived, what your work is now, and so on and so forth. There are many parameters. Everyone is different. Here, the sister is fearing that maybe I've gone overboard with the gifts, with the sadaqah. And therefore, that surplus that I've gone overboard with, the surplus would have the khums levied upon it. That's the question here. If yes, she says, how do I make up khums on the previous amount? I don't remember how much it was. Okay, so in relation to this question, first of all, it most probably there's no need, because you may be a bit obsessed, or you may be a bit of a perfectionist, and that perfectionism is making you now doubt things. Otherwise, there's no need to think like that, especially for your parents or your siblings. Who better to give presents to? How can you ever go overboard by giving presents to your parents? So don't be too strict on yourself here. But let's say, theoretically though, I don't think this applies to the questioner. So don't worry about it, just continue, there's no need to pay the khums. But let's say theoretically you have gone overboard, if that's the situation. Here, you have to, and you don't know what the price is, you have to make an estimate price. That much that you say, this is the minimum. This minimum, I'm sure, I've gone overboard. And then pay a fifth of that. Because you were totally ignorant in relation to the ruling. Let's say if you knew the ruling, and it was your shortcoming by spending overboard, yes, some maraji there may say the minimum estimate will not suffice. It's the maximum estimate which you have to pay a fifth of. Some may say, though, whether you were ignorant or not, it's the minimum estimate you would have to pay for. Okay. The second question, Salam, after watching session 3, and hearing the example about the farmer and the wheat yield, can this be compared to buying a house with a mortgage? Now, I don't want to go through the wheat yield example, okay? But that wheat yield, even though the yield hasn't been actualized and will be actualized next year, but at the end of this year, you have a wheat plant. The clustering hasn't been actualized. So here, if this is of value, if this qualifies as annual gains, remember, malun, mamlukatun, fa'idatun, if it continues, you have to give its khums. Okay, now they're comparing it to buying a house with a mortgage. Okay, now that's the question. Can this be compared? Well, the answer here is yes and no. Depends if the house is your first house or your second house. If it's your first house is your ma'uneh. It's type A ma'une. So there's no problem there. Whatever you spend on a monthly basis, there's no need to pay the khums on that. That is part of your type A ma'une. If it's the second house, yes. Most second houses don't qualify as a ma'une. It's a capital. You're making profit out of it. Okay. Now, then the question says, firstly, does this qualify the house with a mortgage, does this qualify as mamlukaton? Now, this is a very, there's a red light, yes. Does this qualify as mamlukaton, as it is not your own belonging? Right, due to taking a 25-year mortgage, does this qualify as mamlukaton? That's the first question. because it's not your own belonging due to taking a 25-year mortgage? Or does this qualify as a mamlukatun immediately or once you have completed the payments? First of all, I want to laud and applaud the questioner for tracing things back to that original malun mamlukatun fa'idatun or malun mamlukatun muktasabatun, if you follow Ayatollah Khamenei. That's the key to understanding khums. It's all going back to that original definition of annual gains. However, I have to criticize you for picking the wrong index. You chose the mamlukatun index. Whereas when you get a mortgage, from day one, it's yours. There may be stipulations or conditions, but when they give you the house, it's on a loan. But they give you the house. The house is mamlukatun. Okay? So mamlukatun isn't the problem here because it is your belonging. The house is from day one. And so it's from day one. It's immediate. But it's a ma'une. Okay? If it's your first house, it will be classified as your ma'une. If it's your second house, here, it won't be classified as your ma'une. If it's your ma'une, you can deduct it from your annual gains when you pay every month. If it's not a ma'une, it's capital now. Here, it won't be a ma'une. Now, what happens here if it's your second house? This loan, because mortgages are on loans, when something is on loan, it's your belonging. The house is yours. But remember the third index, which was fa'idatun, if you follow Ayatollah Sistani, or muktasabatun, if you follow Ayatollah Khomeini. But let's say the gain example. When you get something on a loan, it's yours. But does it qualify as a gain? You should have thought of the third index. That is the area of controversy with loans. It's the third index. You have a house on a 25-year mortgage. From day one, you're totally in debt. Okay? And you haven't started paying yet. It's yours, but it's not your annual gains because it doesn't qualify as fa'idatun. It's not a gain. Something which you have yet to pay back the loans does not qualify as a gain. Okay? Now, after 1 year, then he continues. Secondly, if it's the latter, and the answer is yes, it is. It's not the latter. It says, secondly, if it is the latter and is mamlukatun, okay, then how would you calculate the khums amount after the first year to be paid on it? Would it be on the value of the house that you've purchased it at, or the value of the value after the year that you purchased it at? And would you have to get your house valued every year when working out the khums? Jazakallah khair. Okay, so here, look, it's a very good question. Although we haven't spoken about loans at all, loans and khums. But here, first of all, the first thing was if it's your first house, it's a ma'one, you can deduct it. There's no problem when you pay for the loans every month. We're going to discuss this in much more detail later. But if it's a second house, it's not a ma'une. This is where the issue is important here, and where your comparison with the wheat yield was very significant. But you missed the index. You went on mamlukatun. No, it's a mamlukatun when you get a house on mortgage. But is it fa'idatun? Is it of any benefit? Have you gained anything? Well, on year zero, you haven't gained anything because you're 100% indebted. Okay, nothing is yours. So it doesn't qualify as an annual gain. After year one, when you've paid installments after 12 months, X amount of money that you've paid, here, malun mamlukatun fa'idatun applies, not in relation to the whole house, but in relation to X amount of the house. Fa'idatun applies here. Okay? So yes, after 1 year, that 1 year of money that you've paid for the house, that would have the chums levied upon it, because it applies as far edaton. Therefore, it applies as annual gains. But remember, for the second house, not for the first house. Anyway, well done for the question. Both questions were very good. But this second question, we haven't gone through all the preliminaries, but inshallah, I've managed to clarify it to some degree. وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.